Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 18, 2018. Defense attorneys for Riek Machar's spokesman says James Gadet is a prisoner of war.
Article 8 talks about all the parties that are signatories to the agreement should release the political detainees within 14 days from the time that agreement was signed. So we thought that this was a very positive development.
And an alliance of female lawyers are investigating a case of a pregnant woman who says she was raped by a man suspected to be a member of the South Sudan Army.
We condemn this on a very serious note. It's a very barbaric act, very inhuman. We really call upon our leaders to really put a very strict measures on those who conduct such act.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Defense lawyers representing Riek Machar's spokesman, James Gadet, who is being tried for treason, among other charges, have withdrawn from the case. Gadet was deported to Juba by Kenyan authorities in late 2016. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Lead defense lawyer Monyluak Alorkwol announced his team's decision to pull out of the case today during a hearing of the High Court in Juba, citing unfairness on the part of the prosecution in its handling of the case. Kwol says the cessation of hostilities agreement signed by the government and various opposition parties last month requires the release of all political detainees. He says Gadet must be released because his case is political, as he is a member of the SPLM in opposition faction led by Machar.
We thought that at this stage, especially after the cessation of hostilities agreement was signed in Addis Ababa, and it came into effect since the 21st of December 2017, there was something that was contained in that agreement we refer to as Article 8. Article 8 talks about all the parties that are signatories to the agreement should release the political detainees within 14 days from the time that agreement was signed. So we thought that this was a very positive development, and if we continue to participate in those proceedings before the court, we will be undermining that.
Under Article 8 of the Cessation of Hostilities Agreement, all parties must release any person who has been deprived of their liberty for reasons related to the conflict, including any prisoners of war, political prisoners, detainees, and abducted women and children. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei denied last week that the government is holding any political detainees. Kwol says his team pulled out on a point of principle regarding the ceasefire agreement, not because of any intimidation by government officials.
We were never intimidated. We were never subjected to any threats. We acted, as I said earlier, we acted on principle.
Gadet was deported from Kenya to South Sudan and was immediately detained by security forces in Juba, where he remains in detention. He is being charged with several political crimes, including treason and a conspiracy against the state. He is being tried together with the South African William John, who was advisor to Machar when the rebel leader returned to Juba in April 2016 to take the position of the first vice president. John is facing the same charges as Gadet. Both have denied the charges. If found guilty, the two could be sentenced to life in prison. Kwol is urging the prosecution team to implement the article of the cessation of hostilities that calls for the release of all political detainees.
We have nothing to do with the court. We respect all the courts, and we consider them to act according to the law. They have to be impartial. We trust them. We trust in them. But then our problem is with the prosecution, because the prosecution represents the government, And it is the prosecution, actually, that was supposed to know all those circumstances that are pertaining to this matter.
Deng Achwil Deng, the chief prosecutor in the case, declined to comment on the criminal cases, saying he is not authorized to speak to the media. Gadet was expected to present his defense witnesses today, but the court was adjourned until next month following the defense team's decision to pull out of all court proceedings related to Jones and Gadet's cases. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
A group of women lawyers say they are working to provide legal assistance to rape victims free of charge. But a religious leader says, although the initiative should help some victims of sexual abuse, the lawyers will face challenges. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
The lawyers with a group known as National Alliance for Women Lawyers say they are saddened by the recent case of a pregnant woman who accused a government soldier of raping her in Aru Junction along the Juba-Nimule Road. The pregnant woman, whom we shall call Helen to protect her privacy, says she and her husband were returning from a dance when an armed man dressed in military fatigues forced her husband to flee and raped her. Speaking in Arabic, she says the attack happened on Christmas Day in Lokeliri County of Jubek State. He first chased my husband. He then returned and threatened me with a gun and a knife and raped me, Helen says. She says her perpetrator was wearing a military trousers. Speaking in Arabic, the victim's husband, whom we shall call Peter, says he begged other villagers to rescue his wife, but it was too late.
We were returning from a dance with my wife because that day was a day of happiness. We met that man on the road and he started chasing me. And because he was holding a gun, I feared for my life. And when I ran, he then went back, caught my wife and raped her.
SPLA spokesman Brigadier General Lul Roy Kwong says he is not aware of any report about a SPLA soldier raping a pregnant woman.
It would be really difficult for us to know with certainty who was that person that was allegedly involved in the rape of a pregnant woman, bearing in mind that even the husband of the victim has not been in a position to properly describe who that assailant was, especially in terms of the way he was dressed up and in terms of his identity. So I would really appeal to the husband of the victim to do more in helping us unearth the true identity of that assailant.
Like many other South Sudanese women who say they were raped, Helen did not know where to report her case or seek justice. Paul Yogusuk, the Archbishop of Central Equatorial Internal Province of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, spoke about the rape on South Sudan in Focus on January 5th. Susan Sebit William, the head of the National Alliance for Women Lawyers, contacted this program and asked for the phone number of Bishop Yogusuk. William says Helen reported the case to her office 2 weeks after she was attacked, making it a bit difficult to collect crucial evidence in the case.
We condemn this on a very serious note. It's a very barbaric act, very inhuman, and we really call upon our leaders to really put a very strict measures on those who conduct such act.
The lawyer says she was also informed that two other girls narrowly escaped an attempted rape by suspected SPLA soldiers in the same area around Christmas time. William stresses that she and other female lawyers will work tirelessly to ensure that Helen and other rape victims receive justice in court.
Justice must prevail because the woman is a pregnant woman. I met her in person with her husband. We took her to the hospital, and she has gone through her medical checkup. We thank God the baby is okay, and also she is not infected by any other STDs like HIV and other sexual disease. So we are very happy for that. That's one part, but then she's psychologically affected.
The head of the National Alliance for Women Lawyers says unless rape perpetrators are arrested, face trial and sentence for their crimes, South Sudanese women will continue to suffer unending pain and humiliation. She urges all women to report rape and any other forms of sexual abuses. Archbishop Yugosuk says soldiers in the South Sudan Army continue to enjoy impunity to the disadvantage of citizens.
Even if they say they arrest, you know, they take to their army camps. And from there, you don't know whether they have been arrested or not. So there is no civilian will go and follow a person who has committed crime in the army camps. How will you go there? You will not even think of going there, otherwise you will even be arrested. So whether they have been apprehended or not, we are not aware. But crime has been committed and continue to commit the crime. They will come, same person will come tomorrow and do the same thing.
Yugosuk alleges South Sudanese live in a state of lawlessness and anarchy and nobody cares.
This is a repeated cases because of the presence of army in the area who has no law and order. They can do what they want to do. And coupled also with the insecurity along Juba Numule Road. So it's like they are by themselves. They can do what they want to do. Because nobody will talk about this. And so, as if there is no really command. So the situation in Aru Junction is not favorable. The army is raping, is intimidating, is threatening the people on daily basis.
The ceasefire and transitional security arrangements monitoring mechanism said in a report released on Monday that it identified 154 reported cases of sexual and gender-based violence between February and December of last year. It also says many other cases go unrecorded. In February 2017, President Salva Kiir ordered the country's defense minister and his army chief of staff to execute soldiers who commit murder or rape against civilians in Ye River State. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Secretary General of the unarmed opposition group South Sudan National Movement for Change sent out a message yesterday alleging that his party's leader, Joseph Pakasoro, who is the former governor of Western Equatorial State, escaped an assassination attempt in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. South Sudan in Focus learned the message, which was sent by Kwaje Lasu, was a false alarm. Pakasoro says his life is not in danger.
It was not a kidnapping attempt. It was a routine, check of Uganda Revenue Authority on every vehicles, especially in the new year, and I happened also to pass by, and they had a check on our vehicle, and after they verified all the documents, after some time, in the fleet of other vehicles also, we were allowed to pass and then go our way.
Did you send any distress calls out to your party members?
No, I never talked about anything. You know, when people get rumors, especially when we are at the neighborhood where the government is suspected of, government of South Sudan is suspected of kidnapping people, probably that is why the message just went up like bushfire. Otherwise, I was not even under threat.
You're talking about kidnapping and you're mentioning the government of South Sudan. Are there cases of the government kidnapping people?
There are cases like the one in Kenya where James Gadet was kidnapped, then Edri and his colleague were kidnapped, and again the governor of Kapweta had been kidnapped just few weeks ago. So when people hear about us being asked on the way, they suspect that this is also the same thing. But in the case of Uganda, that is not the case. We are protected here, and we are safe.
You were saying that Gadet was kidnapped, but my understanding is that Gadet was deported by Kenyan authorities. He wasn't kidnapped.
Of course, these are all issues that are connected to kidnapping or deportation. We have not experienced that kind of act, and the authorities here are responsible, and they take care of all the people who are here as
refugees and as friends.
And someone will ask you, what are you doing in Uganda?
Everybody knows what is happening in South Sudan. So many opposition leaders are not wanted in South Sudan. As such, we have taken refugees in the neighboring countries, and that is the reason why I'm also here under protection.
You were in the United States for some time, and now you are in Uganda. What is happening?
Of course, human beings move up and down, and I came to Addis Ababa to attend the high-level revitalization forum, and from there I came to Uganda, and then I will be returning back to Addis Ababa to attend the peace talk.
What is your opinion about the recent issues of violations of the cessation of hostilities? I remember I saw you in Addis, and your group is a signatory to the cessation of hostility.
In fact, that is unbecoming, and we are really very sorry for that, because we signed the agreement on the cessation of hostility with the hope that every party will respect the cessation of hostility, and there will be no violation. But of late, we are hearing a lot of violations from different parties to the agreement, and it is my call to every person, especially the South Sudan government, to respect the cessation of hostility and stop moving arms and armed groups from one location to another.
Why would you appeal only to the government of South Sudan? What about the other groups? Violation that does not happen in a vacuum. It takes two to fight.
I'm appealing to every party who is violating the cessation of hostility, not only the government of South Sudan.
That's the leader of the unarmed opposition group, the South Sudan National Movement for Change. He was speaking to me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala, earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at school dropouts among refugees in Uganda. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
in your opinion, what are the best ways to fight corruption?
To fight corruption, our people need to be enlightened, and there should be a system in place. We need to strengthen our institutions, because if institutions are strong enough, then I'm sure corruption will be minimized.
By setting up tribunal, because that worked really very, very smooth for Burkinabes. And in that way, Burkina Faso almost realized their dream, which was fighting corruption.
The best is to have strong institutions which are independent, like the Anti-Corruption Commission must be independent of all that proceedings, giving them powers to investigate, to prosecute, and all that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Young South Sudanese girls at a refugee settlement in Uganda are learning life skills in a program specifically designed to help them regain confidence after having to drop out of school. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Moyo in northern Uganda.
The Kajukeji Diocese of the Episcopal Church of Sudan runs the project codenamed Bonga, or Let's Talk in the Bari language. More than 600 girls between the ages of 13 and 19 have enrolled in the program. The girls spend up to 9 months learning career skills at 20 Bonga centers in the Palorinya settlement. 19-year-old participant Doru Rose says her dream of becoming a nurse ended at the age of 15 after her parents suddenly died. Since no relative took in Rose or her siblings, she traveled to Juba to work as a maid. She claims her employer was abusive, so she quit a few months later and thought getting married was her best option.
And then I see like this, I'm saying that as I can be able to do something for my own, let me get married so that I can do something for my own, or the person that I took as my husband can be able to help me.
After fleeing to Uganda last year, Rose heard about the Bonga program and immediately enrolled for vocational skills training. Her six-month life skills course covers family planning, reproductive health, hygiene, and sanitation. After completing the six-month life skills training, the girls enroll in vocational courses such as catering, tailoring, bakery, building, auto mechanics, and computer studies. 17-year-old Guo Beatrice signed up for the tailoring course. She says there is a high demand for hairdressers, even in the refugee camps.
I've chosen hairdressing because it doesn't matter whether which season, because you do
Many
get money anytime.
Many graduates have started their own successful businesses in the settlements. Nyaigo Florence Edu, who took up tailoring after dropping out of primary three school, now runs a center that trains 27 women. Edu says after hard work, she was able to buy 7 sewing machines and uses them to train the women. Speaking in her native Kuku language, Edu says her financial condition has never been better.
Before I joined the program, I had no money at all. I was unable to support myself and take care of our family. But since the program was launched, I joined and got the skill I needed to start my own business and earn enough money to take care of the family and myself. I also have money for other necessities I could not previously afford.
Reverend Eli Kajaminyo, director of the Kajukeji Development and Rehabilitation Agency for the Episcopal Church in Kajukeji, which initiated the program, says South Sudanese girls need this project.
Our cultural practices discriminate against the girls. A girl gets pregnant, she's pulled out of school, the father is angry, she never goes back to school, you know. And some of these girls are really too young to sit at home, too young even to be mothers, but they're already mothers. And so they are so vulnerable that we really think it was better for us to focus on them.
Reverend Kajaminyo says this year he plans to introduce short courses in entrepreneurship at the Bonga centers so participants learn how to obtain startup capital and manage their small businesses. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
African nations saw a big political changes in 2017 with the departure of leaders who had been in office for decades. That change, however, obscured continued trends of abuses of rights and civil liberty, said Human Rights Watch as it released its annual Global Human Rights Report Thursday. From Johannesburg, VOA's Anita Paul has the story.
Africa doesn't take top billing in the latest roundup of global human rights concerns. That dubious honor goes to what Human Rights Watch calls the dangerous trend of intolerance and populist leadership in the United States, Russia, and China. But, says Human Rights Watch's Deputy Program Director Babatunde Olugboji, that doesn't mean the watchdog is taking its eye off Africa.
Women who have been raped, people who have been killed, people who have been arrested, people who have been detained, they're not going to be thinking about nuclear war in North Korea or in Hawaii or anywhere. They're going to be thinking of, my government has the responsibility to respect my right. My government has the responsibility to ensure that I enjoy these rights.
Olugboji and colleagues described concerns in West Africa, such as the bloody insurgency by Boko Haram, the crackdown on the English-speaking minority in Cameroon, and unrest in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which has repeatedly postponed elections. In East Africa, they noted clampdowns on dissent in Ethiopia and Tanzania, and concerns about election-related violence in Kenya, along with the continued war in South Sudan. Researchers, however, noted bright spots in Gambia and in Angola, where longtime leaders finally stepped aside and freedoms are slowly, possibly, growing. Angola researcher Zenaida Machado says that while things appear to be going well since longtime leader José Eduardo dos Santos retired in September, it's too soon to call the Southern African nation a success. She said most of the year was characterized by dos Santos's repressive leadership and his family's ever-increasing wealth.
It was an exciting period in Angola. It's been since September. But it's also important not to forget that the year was still there from January until September 2017 when changes began to be implemented or began to be seen. The majority of 2017 wasn't a good year for Angola.
Ologboji said that rights groups are reserving judgment about Zimbabwe, where the military forced President Robert Mugabe to resign in November after 37 years in power. Mugabe's longtime deputy, Emmerson Mnangagwa, replaced him.
Not much has changed in Zimbabwe. There was this euphoria about Mugabe being pushed out, but when the dust settled, it became clear that these people that have been there forever, I bet again, nothing has changed. There are restrictive laws in the books. There are issues around freedom of expression. The press is not free. People cannot protest.
African governments, he says, may feel the heat is off them because of the world's bigger, louder, more controversial leaders. But, he says, Human Rights Watch is always observing. Anita Pell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
A spokesman for Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has warned opposition leader Raila Odinga not to carry out a plan to inaugurate himself as the people's president or form a rival government in exile. Odinga, who disputes the October presidential election results, told VOA's Swahili service this week he would conduct a so-called inauguration ceremony and form a government. VOA's Daniel Sheff has the story from Nairobi.
Kenya's presidential spokesman, Eric Karaithe, on Thursday responded to opposition leader Raila Odinga's threat to form a government in exile with a warning.
Acts against the Kenyan law, done either within or outside the country, will be treated accordingly. We have systems to deal with actions. When done outside the country, they are treated as actions of aggression against Kenya. When done within the country, we have the criminal law.
Odinga's National Super Alliance has rejected the results of October's rerun election and defiantly pledged to inaugurate him as the people's president on January 30th. In an exclusive interview with VOA's Swahili service Tuesday, Odinga repeated the swearing-in plan and raised the possibility of forming a government. He said an illegitimate government is in office, but the people's government is out of office, and we will work as a government. We will appoint a cabinet. It can be a government in exile, that is, out of the country. It has happened in other countries, said Odinga, but us, we are saying Kenyans will not accept to be governed by an illegitimate government that wasn't voted for by the people. A press release from Odinga's political party, the Orange Democratic Movement, tried to walk back his comments on forming a government in exile. According to the ODM, Odinga said he would only take such a move if authorities tried to stop his swearing-in ceremony. VOA's Swahili service maintains the opposition leader made no such comments during the interview. The 73-year-old Odinga did hint that his inauguration plan could change if Kenyatta's ruling Jubilee Party agrees to talks.
If we cannot talk by 30th of October, of January, we are going to be sworn in. And we will then release our program thereafter.
Presidential spokesman Karaithe on Thursday repeated that the president was open to dialogue on development issues such as land ownership, health care and water, but not on the legitimacy of his government.
The dialogue the government has insisted on is that it must be based on the law and the constitution.
Odinga told VOA that he was not interested in talking to Kenyatta about his development agenda. Kenya was plunged into political crisis when the Supreme Court voided the August election results and Odinga and his supporters boycotted a second round in October. Kenyatta was declared the winner with 98% of the vote, but low voter turnout of 39% led many to question if he had a mandate to lead. Kenya's attorney general warned in December that if Odinga declares himself president, it could be considered treason, a charge punishable by death. Daniel Sheriff, VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Waka Waka by Shakira. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Let's know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also get us on the Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
is Africa.